Friday of last week, a request for prayer came out over the minister's listserv. One of my colleagues was in the lower 48, had just been selected to be the senior minister of a center, and yesterday was to be his installation. That's the thing that we did 3 years ago when I came here, and they were going to do that in that community. This is a transgender male, and he received a death threat. And so he asked for prayer support, and the outflowing of prayer that was just even on the listserv was pretty amazing, and some of the minister's prayers were really beautiful and profound. And I know that, you know, I'm not one to reply all and blast a prayer out to the whole world. And I know there were a lot of people like me. And then yesterday, I got an email. Good day, beloved colleagues. Thank you from every fiber of my being for the outpouring of love and support in response to my prayer request yesterday. There are treasures in every pile of dirty if we're willing to dig deeply. This morning I had a wonderful conversation with a police officer regarding the threat. While he agreed that the thought content was indeed of a threatening nature and important to pay attention to, it did not rise to the level of a criminal offense. He agreed that the subject's references to my transgender status would raise any actual crime to the status of hate crime, but there had been no crime committed at this point. He is going to meet with the subject and attempt to help him understand that his behavior must stop and that he will follow up with me after he has had that conversation. He's also going to stop by tomorrow during the installation ceremony and be as present as possible in the immediate area through his shift. Toward the end of our conversation, he very respectfully said to me, "I'm standing here talking to you, and there is absolutely no possible way that I would know that you're a transgender man. I'm curious, why do you tell people?" My response, "Imagine how deceived the members of my church would feel if I didn't tell them and then they found out." Then I asked him, "Do you have children?" And he responded that he did not, but he and his wife were trying. I continued, "Mostly I am open so your children, if they show up different than you and society think they should be, don't have to grow up in pain, so they won't have to feel suicidal every day simply for being who they are. I am open so children can grow up being their authentic selves and be celebrated. That's why." He got choked up, and with tears in his eyes, he said, "I get it now. Thank you. There are gifts in every pile of dirt if we're just willing to dig deeply enough. I have no idea what the outcome of all this will be, and what I do know is that I am being used to heal our collective consciousness. It's what I have said yes to being my whole life. Living as an open transgender man is just authenticity on steroids." Yes, it's okay to laugh at that. "I know that I am a resource for each of you in your communities." It's a powerful story. Well, welcome everyone. Thank you for coming out on this chilly Alaskan day. And we even within the chilly day, there is a blessing. You know, there's hardly any mosquitoes out now. So, you know, within everything, there is a silver lining. The title of my talk today is Positively Thinking. Positively Thinking. This is the last in a four-part series that I've done. I called it Back to Basics. And we went over some of the basic principles of our theology, our philosophy. I talked about God is all there is. That God, the universe, spirit, source energy, whatever name you decide to assign to the higher power, your higher power. I'm going to use God today mostly because it's a short word and I can say it, that this God is for us and not against us. It's not here to punish us or to torture us. We talked about how our thoughts are creative. We talked about the divine creative process and our teaching symbol and how our thoughts are made manifest. We talked about the law of cause and effect, the law of attraction, and then last week we looked at patterns, the patterns of our thoughts and how we can have both positive and negative thought patterns and how they influence our lives. And so this week we're going to look at creating positive thoughts. Now last week, I think it was last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I did a little poll and asked people if they were interested in more in science and the science behind it and where the science is and the science of mind. And 100%, everybody there raised their hands and said they wanted to see more science. So I spent about 3 days working on a topic that I've talked about before, the double slit experiment. And then after I put all this in, I found this little video and it says it way better than I ever could. So if we could play the little video. And if you are behind a post and you can't see up there, move
and
over because you want to see it.
The granddaddy of all quantum weirdness, the infamous double slit experiment. To understand this experiment, we first need to see how particles or little balls of matter act. If we randomly shoot a small object, say a marble, at the screen, we see a pattern on the back wall where they went through the slit and hit. Now, if we add a second slit, we would expect to see a second band duplicated to the right. Now, let's look at waves. The waves hit the slit and radiate out, striking the back wall with the most intensity directly in line with the slit. The line of brightness on the back screen shows that intensity. This is similar to the line the marbles make. But when we add the second slit, something different happens. If the top of one wave meets the bottom of another wave, they cancel each other out. So now there is an interference pattern on the back wall. Places where the two tops meet are the highest intensity, the bright lines, and where they cancel, there is nothing. So, when we throw things, that is matter, through two slits, we get this, two bands of hits. And with waves, we get an interference pattern of many bands. Good so far. Now, let's go quantum. An electron is a tiny, tiny bit of matter, like a tiny marble. Let's fire a stream through one slit. It behaves just like the marble, a single band. So, if we shoot these tiny bits through two slits, we should get, like the marbles, two bands. What? An interference pattern. We fired electrons, tiny bits of matter through. But we get a pattern like waves, not like little marbles. How? How could pieces of matter create an interference pattern like a wave? It doesn't make sense. But physicists are clever. They thought, maybe those little balls are bouncing off each other and creating that pattern. So, they decide to shoot electrons through one at a time. There is no way they could interfere with each other. But after an hour of this, the same interference pattern is seen to emerge. The conclusion is inescapable. The single electron leaves as a particle, becomes a wave of potentials, goes through both slits, and interferes with itself to hit the wall like a particle. But mathematically, it's even stranger. It goes through both slits, and it goes through neither. And it goes through just one, and it goes through just the other. All of these possibilities are in superposition with each other. But physicists were completely baffled by this. So they decided to peek and see which slit it actually goes through. They put a measuring device by one slit to see which one it went through and let it fly. But the quantum world is far more mysterious than they could have imagined. When they observed, the electron went back to behaving like a little marble. It produced a pattern of two bands, not an interference pattern of many. The very act of measuring or observing which slit it went through meant it only went through one, not both. The electron decided to act differently, as though it was aware it was being watched. And it was here that physicists stepped forever into the strange never world of quantum events. What is matter? Marbles or waves? And waves of what? And what does an observer have to do with any of this? The observer collapsed the wave function simply by observing.
Talked about the double slit experiment several times. It was first done all the way back in 1802. This was before Emerson was born. The very fact that measurement or observation could change the outcome, could change physical matter, could change physical properties. We can take that one step further to say that our thoughts can then influence things, that our thoughts are creative. Came across another quote on the double slit experiment. Summing it all up, in the end, the double slit experiment discovered that electrons and all quantum particles both exist as particles and probability waves. Quantum particles existing as probability waves means that we don't know for certain where these particles are. We can only know the probability of where they will be. These particles are said to be in superposition. This means that they are in all possible states at once. Once we try to observe the state of this particle, the wave function collapses into a single state. And we're going to talk more about this. We're going to have Schrodinger's cat, and we're going to do some other things in the future. But we can collapse those possibility, those waves of possibility. This is the quantum particle-wave duality. And if it's one thing that physicists can't stand, it's duality. They have to have something concrete that they can put those calipers on, that they can measure, that they can do a mathematical formula and predict exactly where it's going to be. Mass times. But then we throw in photons. Photons have no mass. We can't, but it's a little packet of light. Our thoughts are creative, and we know that now. So if our thoughts are creative, what kind of thoughts do we want to have? Do we want to have negative thoughts? Do we want to think the worst is going to happen or is happening right now? Or do we want to have more positive thoughts? I think it's pretty simple that it is to our benefit to have more positive thoughts. How do we go about doing that? Well, if any of you have been in my foundations class or the foundations class that I've taught, you'll know that I talk a lot about affirmations. So if we can use an affirmative statement to help reframe those thoughts, we can improve the condition that we're experiencing. How do we do affirmations? How do you create an affirmation? Anybody that's been in foundations, help me here. I talk about the four P's. Very good. Somebody over here had it. The four P's of affirmations. Can you help me with it? What are they? They need to be positive. Yes.
Personal.
It doesn't make, you know, it doesn't make it for me to know it. It has to be personal to you. What is it for you? Positive and personal and powerful, powerful, yes, and present tense. And everybody remembers the example that I use. Everybody knows Eddie James. He's got Eddie's Sports Bar down here, down the street. And years ago, he had Eddie's Hayloft, and he had, what all did he have? Eddie's Sandbox, yep, yep. The Temporary Affair. And he used to have a sign over his bar that said, free beer tomorrow. And guys would come in, you know, free beer tomorrow? Well, I'll be here tomorrow. And they show up the next day and the sign says, free beer tomorrow. I thought it was free beer. No, free beer's tomorrow. Oh, there are some of those guys came back for weeks waiting for tomorrow to get here. Well, that's like with our affirmations. We need to make it present tense, not future tense. This will happen because the free beer never gets here. Positive, personal, powerful, and present tense. I have a story. This is from the Hebrew Scriptures. Elisha, this is not Elijah. Elisha was Elijah's son. He followed him as king. People ask why I use Bible stories. Bible stories are fascinating, and they often have different layers of meaning. This is an example. I think, you know, that a lot of these Bible stories are kind of like the before Common Era, you know, almost prehistoric version of Netflix and binge watching. People couldn't wait for the next installation. You know, oh, what's going to happen to Moses next? And the stories were passed down in an oral tradition, you know, verbally, one person to another, one generation to the next. And it was waiting. What's going to happen to David next? Oh my, you know, thrown into the lion's den. Oh, we can't wait for next week to hear what's going to happen. Well, this is part of a series, and here's this king, and he was Elisha. He kind of ratted out some of the people that were worshiping a different god. They were worshiping Baal, and Elisha sort of ratted them out, and they weren't too happy with him, so they were going to really get him. And he was in a small village, and the king sent his whole army after Elisha. I mean, they all came, and they had horses, and they had swords, and they had chariots and everything, and they were going to kill Elisha. And one morning, Elisha's servant got up and was going to fetch the morning water, and he walked out of the house, and he looked around, and oh boy, the whole town was surrounded with this army, and there's all these guys and their chariots and their horses and their swords. And he knew this didn't have the marks of a good outcome. This was not a good sign. So he went back in to Elisha. He says, hey, boss, he said, wake up. There's all these guys out there, and they've got us surrounded. We are totally surrounded. And they've got chariots, and they got horses, and they got swords, and they're coming to kill us. What are we going to do, boss? And Elisha said, you need to look deeper. You need to see beyond. You need to see beyond this army that's got us surrounded. Because on the other side of that army is another army. And this is an army that has chariots of fire. This is the army of our God. And our God is more powerful than anything else. And our God will defeat that army. And that's what happened. The army of God, the flaming chariots, the horse of fire, drove out Baal's army. Now, these stories of the Bible, of the Hebrew scriptures, as well as the Christian gospels, have a plot to them. It's a great plot. Sometimes they don't make a lot of sense, but they have a plot. And that's like if we just follow the plot only, if we're binge watching Netflix, some of the series in there. Yeah, the plot's okay, but oftentimes there's a bigger meaning. What could be the bigger meaning in this story? What could be a different way to look at that? Well, let's take a quantum leap into this day, into just about 100 years ago, as Ernest Holmes talked about it. In The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes wrote, "The science of mind is based entirely upon the supposition that we are surrounded by a universal mind into which we think. This mind, in its original state, fills all space. It fills the space that man uses in the universe. It is in man as well as outside of him. As he thinks into this universal mind, he sets a law in motion which is creative and which contains within itself a limitless possibility." Ernest Holmes really talking a lot about quantum behavior. He's talking about collapsing a different possibility, collapsing a different waveform than what we currently have. And so this analogy, this story of Elisha really fits, because here's Elisha surrounded by an appearance, the appearance of something that he didn't want, the appearance, this army that's against him. But beyond that appearance is another collapse, another possibility, another quantum possibility, and that there is something greater out there that is for us, that is with us, that is helping us. Now, in that era, they like to use the term, you know, the symbols of an army and helping them. Today, we can look at this same story and realize that there is a power in the universe. It is for us, and it can help us. And we can open ourselves up to that, and we can collapse a different possibility. We can collapse a possibility that is for us, that is for our benefit, for our good. And we can do that every day. You see, my friend, my transgender friend, experienced being surrounded by fear, by being surrounded by an experience that he didn't want to have. And yet he was able to see beyond the effects, see beyond that, and know that there is a higher truth, that there is a different way to be. He's consciously chosen to collapse a world of acceptance and love and peace and equality rather than one of shame and separation. Even though he's surrounded by that army of effects, he chose to see the greater army that is for him. Remember, there is a power for good in the universe, and we can use it. And so with that idea, I'd like to ask my colleagues, practitioners, to join me in surrounding and holding our congregation in love and light, seeing beyond all of the effects, seeing beyond the army to the greater army, the greater truth, the quantum truth. And we collapse that possibility for every condition that each and every one of us go through every day. And we all go through it. For those of you who are experiencing lack and limitation, that the paycheck runs out before the month does, we just simply know that on the other side of that army of lack and limitation, that there is an abundant universe, a universe that is open to us. And so on behalf of anyone who is experiencing that lack, I just accept all of the good, all of the God, all of the universe. Every need is met. here and now. And that is the possibility that I collapse. For anyone who's experiencing health challenges, we just simply know that behind the effect of disease, there is a blueprint within each and every one of us, a blueprint of perfection, of that magnificent baby in the back, perfect in every way. We all have within us that perfect baby. And it is that pattern, that blueprint that is perfect that I collapse for each and every person who is experiencing dis-ease, disharmony. And for each and every person who is experiencing separation, separation from one another, separation from God, we just simply know that there is a spiritual truth in that God is indeed existent at every point in space, at every moment in time, and so that God is within each and every one of us, and that every one of our relationships, whether they be romantic, whether they be at work, family, it makes no difference because we are all individualized expression of the Most High. We just simply allow that love of God to flow into our lives. We collapse the possibility of love. And so as we move into this season of peace, that is what we are doing. We are collapsing a possibility of peace, peace in this world, peace within each and every one of us. And it's that which we embrace. And so we just give thanks. We give thanks for our awareness of our ability to collapse a different outcome, to collapse an outcome that is for our good. We give thanks for our awareness of the power and the presence of God. And so now we just step back and we allow the universe to work with us and to work for us. We let it go, we let it be, and so it is.